Australia is in its 25th year of uninterrupted economic growth, surviving a series of crises around the world without falling into a recession. Many say that much of the credit of this is due to the policies of the Reserve Bank and its soon-to-retire governor, Glenn Stevens. Today, Glenn Stevens will deliver his final public speech in Sydney, where he's likely to be feted for his management of the Australian economy during a turbulent decade. But one senior financial analyst says things are not that clear-cut. Shotajit Das is a former banker and author who warned of the toxic dangers of global derivatives well before the GFC hit us in 2008. Our business editor Cheryl Bagwell spoke to him earlier about the Glenn Stevens legacy.
Overall, it's always a mixture of things. One is just sheer luck. I think Richie Beno once said that captaining the Australian cricket side is 90% luck and 10% skill. And you shouldn't try it without the 10%. So perhaps the RBA and the government have provided the 10%.
Australia was one of the few economies, of course, not to fall into a recession during and post the GFC in 2007-08. Can we thank Glenn Stevens and the RBA for at least cutting rates deeply and quickly when the crisis did hit hard?
Well, I think you have to say that that was a response of all central banks around the world, and the Reserve Bank of Australia merely followed. And history may well record that Australia's growth during that period, which certainly was better than the rest of the world, was a result of a mixture of factors, which included the fact that the government guaranteed all bank liabilities. It also injected a massive amount of money into the economy in the form of direct payments to households, and also the fact that during that period, the emerging markets, particularly China, which is such an important trading partner for Australia, continued to grow very, very strongly. So I think the Reserve Bank's role is relatively modest in all of those things.
So the major impact really came from fiscal policy, from the government of the day, which was the Rudd-Swan government.
That was correct. They certainly played a major role in helping bolster demand in the economy.
Since the GFC, of course, we've seen interest rates around the advanced world, advanced economies, move ever lower, triggering rises along the way in assets from, you know, equities to housing from China to Australia. Do you think that this policy that Glenn Stevens and the RBA have belatedly joined, in a sense, has worked?
Well, I think around the world, lower interest rates have come about for a mixture of reasons. The major one is accidental, which is effectively governments, and this is the elected governments, have abnegated all responsibility for dealing with the crisis, and they've basically passed the poison chalice to central bankers, who of course have the advantage that they're not elected. And essentially what central bankers have done is use the only tools available to them to create a very artificial stability, but they have not been able to restore growth or increase inflation to levels necessary to deal with the problems, which is basically high debt, which caused the events of 2008-2009.
But along the way, at least, the US Federal Reserve is starting to see results. The economy in the US is still growing at a very slow rate, but the labour market has repaired. Could you give them a tick for not only lowering interest rates, but quantitative easing? Looking back at that period, has it worked?
There's a couple of things about the US economy. It's the best of the dirty shirts in the global economy. And I think even the US policymakers admit that. And they had certain advantages. And the first advantage was that they were actually the first. In financial markets, there's an old saying, if you're going to panic, panic first, because then it's not called panic. And they actually were able to recapitalize their banking system with $700 billion and write off bad debts. They were also able to cut interest rates and launch quantitative easing before everybody else, which devalued the US dollar, giving them some external demand to drive growth. And the fact that they were able to do that first allowed them to get a head start on the rest of the world. And what has happened subsequently is other central bankers have followed those policies, but they're less effective because they're now competing with each other in a spiral to the bottom of interest rates, more quantitative easing, and weaker currencies. And the fact of the matter is the major movement has been in currencies, and unfortunately not everybody can devalue simultaneously because not everybody can have the cheapest currency.
What else could central banks like the RBA do, though?
Well, I don't think they have much to do because the problems now cannot be solved by monetary policy. And they're structural in nature in the global economy. And I think the real issue now is the central bankers have actually overreached. I think it was Winston Churchill who once said that no matter how beautiful your strategy, sometimes you should look at the results. And the strategy is now counterproductive. It's weakening the banking system through negative interest rates or very low interest rates. Quantitative easing is creating bubbles in asset markets. I can't think of any asset market which isn't overvalued to some degree. And it's also set off currency wars between nations, which is leading to a lack of coordination of policy, which is crucial. So essentially, they're now overreaching. And what they're now doing as their policies become less and less effective is they're doubling down. And I think the basic thing is that they've actually forgotten what their aim is. And I think it would be wise of central bankers to understand that they can't actually improve the position from here. That has to be done by governments through structural reforms and ultimately the unpalatable writing off of a lot of debt around the world.
So are you saying that their power there has kind of morphed into something that's more malignant than benign?
I think central banks have some power, but I think they've overreached quite considerably. I think one of the members of the European Central Bank Governing Council described them as magical people. I certainly don't think they have any magical ability to influence the economy. And I think the danger, which is not only on the part of central bankers, but on policymakers globally, is they're starting to interfere with the market mechanism to a degree, which is making that mechanism fail more and more. And the more they intervene, the more this starts to look like the United Soviet Socialist Republic.
Do you believe that the RBA now too has overreached? I mean, it is now cutting rates down to very, very low levels. We're down to 1.5% for the cash rate. The RBA suggested it could take it even lower. Are we at the kind of point in our return of a monetary policy here too?
The Australian Central Bank and the Australian economy is very, very small in the greater scheme of things. And to a large extent, what they've been doing for the last few years is completely reactive to things which are happening outside of Australia. And so their attempt to gain competitiveness, because Australia is generally unwilling to do the structural reforms, cut the actual cost basis of Australia to the level that it's necessary, they're using the currency to do that. And the problem is the interest rates in Australia are still high, even at 1.5%, relative to the rest of the world. And that means that they are now engaged in a war of interest rates and currencies, which ultimately will have no winners.
Do you believe that the banks, the retail banks here, have blunted the central bank's monetary policy action, though, by not passing on the rate cut in full last week?
Well, I think the fundamental problem is the banking systems around the world are largely in private hands, but we are now actually stating that they are actually a tool of monetary policy, which is kind of difficult to achieve when you have private shareholders. And the phenomenon globally is that cutting interest rates further or pumping more money into the economy to get credit growth going is not working. So Australia's banks' reactions and the way they're behaving is perfectly in line with what is happening globally.
So what should they say, the bank CEOs, when they're hauled before the federal parliament to explain the next time they don't pass on that interest rate cut?
Well, I think it's up to the banks to explain their own actions. But there is an inherent contradiction in having private shareholders, but also having public duties, which are not detailed in their banking licenses.
What do you see as Glenn Stevens' legacy, having steered the bank for the past 10 years? When you look back, what would you say would be his greatest achievement or his greatest failure?
His legacy will be the legacy of a cohort of central bankers, which range from Ben Bernanke, Janet Yellen, Mark Carney, Mervyn King, around the world. So he will not be separated from that. And I think collectively they will be, as the record will state, that they essentially managed to stabilize factors using monetary policy and quantitative easing, but they overreached in terms of trying to create growth and inflation. And ultimately they left a legacy of larger problems than the ones they started with.
So Glenn Stevens is getting out at the right time, perhaps?
Well, Robert Lowell once said that nobody should stay on the train more than one stop past their station.
That's Satyajit Das is a former banker and author. He had a ringside seat to the GFC back in 2008, speaking with our business editor, Cheryl Bagwell.